Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types. Although if you are a baby boomer or octogenarian or teeny bopper or what have you, you're more than welcome to listen as well. My name is Travis and my co-host is Rachel.
Hi.
And we'd like to say hello to everybody at Netroots Radio who's listening right now. This is our debut episode. We are really, really happy and excited to be part of the Netroots family.
Yes, we are.
So here we are. Welcome us.
Yes. So we have had this podcast for about 9 months.
Yeah. So it's a full-term baby at this point. And Netroots is birthing it.
Yes. So you can go back and listen to old episodes, and we'll give you that contact information at the end. But this isn't like our first podcast ever.
Yeah. This ain't our first rodeo.
Right.
It might sound like it.
Hopefully not.
Right. So, we talk about politics, current events. We're here in Denver, Colorado, so we talk about some local current stuff sometimes, the world at large, all kinds of good stuff, anywhere from intersectional feminism to race relations, criminal justice, all the good stuff we care about from our semi-privileged white people perspective.
Yep.
Would you say?
Uh-huh.
And right now we're in my apartment in Aurora that's literally all just boxes and crap ready to be moved. We're literally moving in the morning.
Yeah.
I am across town. So there's that, but we're still
bringing
this podcast.
For our regular listeners, sorry about the delay. We usually do a couple a week, and we haven't done one for about a week because it's been a crazy week.
Yeah, there's new jobs, starting a new job and moving, and Rachel's got a newish job that she's still getting settled with and all kinds of stuff, but enough about that. Here we are. Let's talk about what we're here to talk about. The NFL draft. So Laremy Tunsil slips to 13th overall for the Dolphins, and Jared Goff first overall. A little bit of a surprise. Rachel's looking at me like
we're not
I'm
having a
speaking
sports,
Mandarin Chinese.
A sports cast.
Okay, no, I'm kidding. So what do we got, Rach?
Okay, so lots has been going on, and we're going to talk about politics, and we're going to talk about the presidential race and all that kind of stuff. But the main story of the evening is going to be a case that came to my attention out of Oklahoma. And it is gross and disgusting and makes me want to burn the world down.
Even by Oklahoma standards.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot.
By any standard. It is absolutely unacceptable.
Well,
so,
Oklahoma's been in the news for a lot of stuff lately, but we'll get to this first.
So there was a case in Oklahoma where I'm just going to give you some background. A 17-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl were drinking with friends at a park in Tulsa. She got drunk. They were drinking with friends, so it was just not just the two of them. She got really drunk to the point of coming in and out of consciousness and had to be carried to the car of the 17-year-old boy who offered to give her a ride home. Witnesses at the time said that she was like blackout drunk, like couldn't walk, couldn't talk, completely drunk. So he drove her to her grandmother's house, and then we find out later her grandmother found her. She was unconscious. She was taken to the hospital. She had her blood alcohol content tested. It tested at 0.34. To give you some context for that, right around 0.4 is where you start to get into death territory.
Yeah, 0.2
is
legal
is,
limit, right?
No. 0.08 is the legal limit.
Wow, okay.
So 0.08 is about 1 to 1.5 drinks. 1.6 tends to be like you're drunk. 2 and above tends to be like really drunk. 0.34
blackout,
is you're almost dead. So she woke up to being examined by doctors and nurses in a local hospital. As they were examining her, they found semen around her mouth and on the back of her leg. She doesn't remember leaving the park even. The semen came back a match to the 17-year-old boy who had driven her home. When confronted by law enforcement, he said, "Oh yeah, definitely. She performed oral sex on me and she consented." He was charged with a statute in Oklahoma called forcible oral sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to court. The trial court judge dismissed the case.
And why did the trial court judge dismiss the case? Do you know, I have a couple questions on yeah. details.
Yeah.
So, like, who reported, who took the girl in? Did they drop her off and say she got raped? I mean, how did they even know to do a rape kit on her? I mean,
I don't know.
How did she get to the hospital? There's
some
missing
pieces.
Well,
she was with her grandmother, or she was at her grandmother's house, and then I don't know.
So they did
the
old thing where they have the really drunk kid and they just drop him at grandma's doorstep and run away?
No, he took her to her grandma's house and there sexually assaulted
her. Oh, at grandma's house.
At grandma's house.
Oh, that's classy.
Yep. And then I don't know if he said, like, she's not waking up, we should maybe take her in, or if grandma found her and said, what the hell, and took her to the hospital. I don't know. But I'm guessing the boy didn't take her in because they...
No, I would doubt that.
They had reason to believe that perhaps she had been assaulted or they wouldn't have been doing a rape kit on her. So I don't know the details of that. That was not part of the research that I did, but that's the basic facts. So the trial court judge dismissed the case. Obviously, that was appealed. And the appeals court upheld the dismissal. And this is where I'm going to get into the legal part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the way the statute is written in Oklahoma, forcible sodomy, they give a series of qualifications of what that means. And included in that is not incapacitation.
Right.
Now, there's a different rape statute in Oklahoma that covers vaginal and anal intercourse or vaginal and anal assault that incapacitation due to alcohol or anything else is covered, but oral sodomy or oral sex is not covered.
Right.
And so the appeals court was trying to say, or did say essentially, forcible sodomy, this is a quote, forcible sodomy cannot occur where the victim is so intoxicated as to be completely unconscious at the time of the sexual act.
So, okay.
So because she didn't fight back.
They couldn't have been forcible.
It couldn't have been forcible. Now, if he had raped her vaginally or anally, they would have considered that rape because that's part of that statute.
So there's nothing this kid can be charged with.
Correct.
Oh.
Now, he could have been charged with unwanted touching.
Wow.
Which obviously does not cover the gravity of what he did to this poor 16-year-old girl.
No, of course not. But he's not even getting charged with that.
No. So legal scholars are saying the ruling was appropriate, although the problem with the situation is the laws, that the laws need to be changed.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have to change the laws. Now, that's fine. Let's do that. Let's change those laws. That's so easy, right? It just happens, just bing, bang, boom, done.
Well, I've heard
no
some
worry,
other.
Right?
I've heard some other experts say that it is way outside the bounds of the spirit of the law to interpret it the way they did.
It is, and the prosecutors were absolutely dumbfounded. They were like, "This did never exist as a loophole until this appeals court created the loophole. This was not a thing that existed." Now, the appeals court declined to make this case precedent, mm-hmm. which means that they're not saying this applies to other cases. The problem with that is the loophole exists now. So anyone who gets charged in the state of Oklahoma with forcible sodomy is going to use it. Whether or not they use this case as precedent, they're going to use this, right? So there was this legal scholar who was quoted who said, the law should now try to protect sexual autonomy as opposed to sexual morality. That's their goal now.
That's their goal now.
Yeah, going forward. So we could talk about this all night. Obviously, it's incredibly upsetting for this particular girl. But it has way more far-reaching consequences than just her.
Absolutely.
So let's say you are under anesthesia, and you have a particularly gross surgeon or dentist or something else, if you're incapacitated,
they might get illegal touching, which is
maybe
like a misdemeanor and
maybe
like a $20 fine
maybe
or something.
I worry about people with disabilities. I worry about people who are nonverbal. I worry about people who are in a coma.
Now, this is something with any functional state legislature would take this up today and fix it.
Emergency session done.
Right. But this is Oklahoma.
This is Oklahoma. This is the most conservative state in the country with the most conservative legislature in the country.
Which, when it came to protecting kids from sexual assault, you would think conservatism would be something that they would be in line with the way we think, but
they really are about victim blaming in this case,
well,
right?
It's like the BYU student code of honor. Yes. If you get raped, the first thing is to worry about is, did you break the honor code?
Exactly.
And then we'll maybe worry about the rapist later.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just don't even know what to say. I mean, it's incredibly upsetting. Of course it's forcible. If you can't give your consent, then it's rape.
Yeah. I mean, there's no discussion about it.
No.
There's no two ways about it.
No. I don't care what the law says. I don't think anyone ever imagined in Oklahoma that this would be the way it is. But it's also conveniently to victim blame her, to say, well, you were drinking and you couldn't give your consent. You couldn't do anything. Like, you know, there was this sort of tone, from what I understand, in the courtroom that was like, well, it doesn't say anything about incapacitation due to alcohol. They kept bringing it up.
Well, of course. And if you're this kid's defense attorneys, you use the law to try to get your client off.
Yeah, but even the judge, the trial court judge, was like, I mean, you know. And I'm like, no, I don't know. I mean, the sentence, literally, like, forcible sodomy cannot occur where the victim is so intoxicated as to be completely unconscious at the time of the sexual act. Yes, that's exactly when it can occur. Of course it can.
Yeah.
Of course it can.
I've read quite a few legal scholars talking about this case saying it is a really bizarre interpretation of the law, of the spirit of the law. That, yes, you can make a case that it is factually to the letter correct-ish, but there is a bit more than a bit of discretion for judges to work within the spirit of a given law.
Well, and the fact that the trial court judge dismissed it did not go to a jury. A jury of 12 people, even Oklahomans, sorry Oklahomans, would have looked at this case and said, of course he forced her.
You would think.
Of course he did. But the trial court judge didn't even let it get that far. He dismissed the case before ever allowing it to go to trial.
Wow.
And then the appeals court upheld it. And so now in Oklahoma, please don't be a woman in Oklahoma.
Or don't be anybody of the LGBT stripe in Oklahoma, because we should also mention, as Molly, our friend Molly, has brought to our attention, that they just passed the new, quote, religious freedom bill affecting social workers and
psychiatrists.
That's
in Tennessee.
I thought it was Oklahoma.
It's Tennessee. But Oklahoma does have a bunch of Religious Freedom Restoration Act bills.
Okay, my mistake then.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's absolutely terrifying to me that there are women who live, really anyone who's vulnerable, that lives in Oklahoma, you know, there's a free ride. Just get somebody drunk and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, apparently that's what they're doing. And then I think it sort of fits in with the mindset of the way they address things like rape. And so what they can say is, well, you see, girls, this is what happens if you get drunk. You know, it's really your fault.
Well, it's John Kasich's point.
Right, right.
Don't go to, you know, girls, just don't go to parties where there's alcohol. No, stop raping women. That's the issue. Stop raping women. Mm-hmm. Don't rape.
And in this case, it's the most egregious form of it, right? That they have, the evidence is there.
Yes.
And yet, still, there's...
And it can't be a he said, she said, because her blood alcohol level was 0.34 on record.
Well, that is actually working in the defense's case.
Not in a normal human mind, though.
Well, in the mind of the Oklahoma courts.
Well, but I'm saying in a normal world, if you were in Colorado, for example, mm-hmm. and this case came about, Colorado state law says she is unable to give her consent.
Right, right. So it's rape. Or forcible sodomy, whatever you want to call it.
Even if she was not blackout drunk, even if her BAC was like 0.2 and she was like, yeah, let's do this.
Uh-huh.
Under Colorado state law, Colorado would say she is unable to give her consent because she's intoxicated.
Yeah.
Sort of goes the opposite, like the opposite extreme of that. And a lot of state laws are that way. Oklahoma is just not one of them. But really, if you were in a normal state with a normal system of laws, you know, a lot of rape cases don't go forward because there's a he said, she said. There's a she consented, no, I didn't, it was rape, no, it
right,
wasn't.
Right, right,
and
right.
In this case, you couldn't even make that argument.
No.
You found DNA on her mouth. He said it was consensual. The back of her leg. He said it was consensual. We have her BAC on record as being 0.34. So we know that she was incapacitated and couldn't have consented. In a normal world, this would be a slam dunk case.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking. I mean, even the prosecutors, they were absolutely
dumbfounded. Yeah, they were kind of gobsmacked, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But my point is that this can be used by these backwards-thinking people in Oklahoma that want to blame the victim first.
Yeah, And
say, well, you see what happens?
Yeah.
Like, the law won't protect you. Uh-huh. You just, this is your fault.
You brought this on yourself. No.
You got drunk. You went to a party, and now this is the price you pay.
You hung out with boys, and you put yourself at risk. And yes. What were you wearing, by the way?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, we haven't even gotten to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't even have to, didn't even have to go there.
No, or how many people she slept with. Mm-hmm. How many dicks she sucked in the group of friends they have. They didn't mm-hmm. even call those witnesses because they didn't even get to go to trial.
No, because there was not even a question of was any crime committed, because under their statutes, if you're passed out drunk, your orifices are all up for grabs, I guess?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, wait, no, just the mouth.
Just the mouth.
Right.
Or I guess you could just, like, come all over someone and they don't care about that. As long as it's not vaginal or Jesus. Anal, then you're fine. So basically, like, just, you know.
Well, I think that is what the kid actually admitted to. So he may have even done more than that. It's just what he admitted to.
Yeah.
Maybe he knew. Maybe he knew the law and that he'd get off, but.
Or maybe he thought that maybe he's like one of those, you know, what do they call it?
Affluenza teens?
No, what's Rick Warren's church?
Oh, I forgot.
Saddleback.
Yeah.
Saddlebacking. Maybe he thought that if he just put it in her mouth, Jesus wouldn't see it.
Well, boys never care about that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that. I knew a kid that grew up Mormon, and he sure did.
Really?
Yep. He lost it to a girl in the butt because they were Mormon, and they figured that was the way to not piss
right.
off JC.
Okay. Well, they were both kind of in on it. I know a lot of girls who used that excuse.
Yes.
In high school.
Yes.
But
so there's a related case that I want to talk about really quick that our friend. Friend of the show and sometimes correspondent Brenna brought to our attention. Brenna currently lives in Hays, Kansas, and so that's why this is on her radar, although it should be on everyone's.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ongoing trial that's happening, and it has to do with the rape of a female college student in her dorm room at Fort Hays State University.
Okay.
So this is what we know. Three college students, men, went to a dormitory. There's video footage of them riding in an elevator, going to the fifth floor, and then I guess there's a male wing and a female wing of the dorm.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those people went to the female wing. And then in court today, there was witnesses testifying about what happened. So according to the guy that was the kind of, what do you call it? He's not the rapist, but he was there, right?
Yeah.
He was saying what they did was they were walking down the hallway of this dormitory, jiggling the handles of the doors to see if any of them would open. Not knocking on any of them, but walking down the female wing of this dorm and just jiggling door handles. And one opened, and there was a passed out girl on the bed. And they kept walking, and they went to find one of their friends that lived in that dorm and talked to her for a few minutes. And then came back down the hallway and passed that room again. And I guess it was just too tempting.
Mm.
And so this man, Fernando Cantero, went into the room, leaned over, and whispered in her ear. She apparently remained passed out. He started kissing her. And the friend that was with him at that point left to go be with the other friend who did not come into the dorm hallway, the female wing.
Okay.
When this guy, the friend, was on the stand today, he was asked some pretty gross questions by the defense attorney, including...
Wait. So give me the extent of what happened or what the charges are.
Oh, he raped her.
Okay.
Yeah, he raped her. And she woke up and he was raping her.
Woke up to that.
Yeah. And... they found his DNA on her sheets and her DNA on his jeans.
Right.
And there was a witness, a female witness next door, that heard someone jiggling handles and then also heard sort of a scuffle in her room because she was, like, through the wall. So he's being charged with rape.
Okay.
Yeah. So his friend, I'm sorry, right. So anyway, his friend was on the stand today and was testifying about what he saw. And the defense attorney at one point said, did you see the female pull Cantero close to her? And he said, I guess you could say that. So they're trying to say that...
that it was somehow consensual.
Yeah. Because she's passed out on her bed in a dorm room, and a stranger that she's never met jiggles the handle, opens the door, walks into the room, whispers in her ear, starts kissing her, and she wakes up and goes, oh my God, how romantic, let's do this. Like, what the fuck kind of world do you think these people are in?
But just so I'm clear, both the perpetrator and the witness cop to the fact that this girl was passed out when they encountered her.
Correct. And they didn't know her.
And the defense is still trying to use that. Now, is this a trial in progress?
It's a trial in progress.
Wow.
This is like the third day of it, yeah. But that's where it's going. That's where it's headed.
Well, hopefully it's headed where it should be headed.
Yeah.
In a conviction.
Yeah. Let's hope. Yeah. So that's our fun, rape news for the week.
Well, and just want to throw in that because it's been in the news lately. It's not as current, but at BYU, there was a girl who reported a rape.
Yes.
And then the first thing they did basically was go after her for breaking the honor code of drinking with boys or something.
Yep. Yep. So BYU has an honor code that says basically you have to follow the tenets of the Mormon faith to attend the school. So like no dating,
no rape, hanging I figure would be out. In there too, right?
Oh, yes, but not nearly as important as don't drink.
Well, it's because it's a girl.
Exactly. And they don't want to ruin that poor young man's life, so they need to make sure that she didn't violate the honor code before they figure out if he fucking raped her.
Right.
So, anyway, that's the rape for the week. It's just endlessly upsetting. And I'm going to recommend to anybody who's listening yet again the documentary The Hunting Ground. It's available on Netflix, I believe. It's also on HBO, and it is pretty searing and pretty incredible documentary about the state of rape on college campuses and the sort of systemic cover-up of them and why they aren't reported at greater numbers, and highly recommend it.
Yeah, and it still sort of boggles my mind. I know that once in a blue moon you will get a woman who comes up with a phony rape charge or a questionable rape charge. In fact, it once happened to a friend of mine, and fortunately the evidence was pretty clear and there were a lot of witnesses and he never got charged.
Yeah.
And he was freaking out a little bit. But, you know, that didn't lead me or him to all of a sudden, you know, jump to this idea that there's no such thing as rape or what
all
have
rape
you.
Is made up.
Right.
So the statistic is less than 2% of reported rape cases are false. And if you think about the percentage of rapes that aren't reported, I don't think we should be worrying about the 2% or less that are false. I think that's like saying we don't care about, that's like saying, well, climate change must not be real because 2% of climate scientists
right.
don't believe in it.
Right,
well,
right.
Fuck them. That's not the point. Climate change is still a huge problem. So is rape.
Mm-hmm.
Even if 2% may not always be factual. And the number of them that are absolutely 100% just believe women. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Believe women.
Well, and it boggles my mind that people like George Will and Fox News and, you know, why can we not all unite in opposing rape? I mean, what? Like, I know we're not going to find common ground on a lot of stuff. We're not going to find common ground in the economy. And we're not going to find common ground on immigration. We're not going to find common ground on foreign policy, usually. But rape?
Like, well, because
why is this a left-right thing? I'm
you
still...
know why. You know why. Because women are taking power. Male sexual entitlement is being taken away.
Mm.
We're saying you do not have access to my body. You're not entitled to my body. You're not entitled to sex. And when women have ever said that in history, men just take it from them. And when you start to talk about men losing sexual entitlement, makes them angry. And it makes them feel like being persecuted and they couldn't possibly... And I think there's also an idea that men think that couldn't possibly have really happened. It's so horrible that I can't believe how often it must happen. It can't be true.
Well, I don't think they think that. What I think is the Fox Newses of the world prop up the very rare and isolated stories of a guy's life being ruined because of a false rape accusation... and apply that to the norm of every rape accusation.
Why don't they talk
which is
about
ridiculous, of course.
The numerous women and how their lives were affected by being raped?
Of course. Of course. That would be the sensible thing to do, even if you're looking at it from just a cold numbers logic perspective.
Yeah.
But they don't. The same people who want to dismiss when we're talking about war that want to dismiss civilian casualties as collateral damage are going to use the 1 or 2% of men who were falsely accused of rape to completely dismiss the 98.99% of legitimate rape victims, many of which never even come forward.
Correct.
For reasons we've discussed ad nauseum. But yep. It still boggles my mind. And it is still hard to get my head around, because I don't necessarily think at heart a guy like George Will is worried about having his sexual hegemony over women taken away. Maybe
it is, and there's also, I think we also have to talk about the empathy gap in the Republican mind, right?
Oh, certainly.
If your wife, your sister, your mom, your girlfriend got raped, mm-hmm. you're real, real upset about it.
Oh yeah,
right. Of course. Then rape becomes something you're going
to go to the legislature and change the law.
Yeah, or you're going to go beat somebody up or kill somebody, or you know what I mean?
Right.
It becomes an issue that you give a shit about. If it's just this like sort of amorphous blob of most women, 1 in 3. Like, hasn't directly affected me, so I don't give a shit. Right?
Yeah.
There's that, too. The Republican empathy gap. Either way, it's... rape culture's real, and it's out there, and it's something that we will continue to talk about, because...
Yeah, though it's very much in the news and on a lot of people's consciousness, it certainly hasn't come up enough, I think... in the presidential election cycle so far. Hillary maybe touched on it a little bit, but it's not improving. In fact, we're seeing more glaring, awful...
The only person I'm hearing talk about it is Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. She's doing two things. One, she's addressing sexual assault on college campuses, and two, she's addressing sexual assault in the military.
Yeah.
And she's the only person that I'm aware of that is... an out loud advocate for talking about these issues. And
right.
She's amazing, and I love her, and I'm so grateful to her for that. But that's one person in government that's talking about it.
One is better than zero.
That's not an answer. One is better than zero.
No,
it's fucking bullshit. There needs to be a majority. Like,
well, it was a sarcastic quip.
No, I know, but it's serious. Like, it's serious, and she's not getting any support.
Not even from her fellow Democrats?
It's sort of like, I'm with you. Like, I'll vote for it or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's something that came across all of our radar this week that made us all very upset. So we'll keep you in the loop as far as this Fort Hays State University rape case goes, but let's move on to something a little less completely... devastating.
Okay, what did you have in mind?
You're up.
I'm up. Well, our friend Ted Cruz from the planet Cruzanthian and the Alpha Centauri sector.
Oh, Ted Cruz.
Made a big splash by presuming himself to be the Republican, the candidate, the winner of the nominee. Yeah. I'm just at a loss for words thinking about it. And he pulled a stunt that hasn't been pulled since Reagan in 76, decided to, when it was clear that he wasn't going to catch Ford, or it was very unlikely he was going to catch Ford in the delegate count, decided to try to drum up news by naming a vice presidential running mate.
Yeah.
And I forget who it was that Reagan named, but it didn't work.
No, he lost that election.
No. And Cruz has decided to name our old friend Carly Fiorina.
Yeah.
As his quote-unquote running mate.
Which is hilarious for so many reasons. So, first of all, he won 3 delegates in the last bunch of primaries.
Yeah, yeah.
3. He's not going to win.
No.
And what happens is what he's hoping happens, which is a brokered convention, and he gets it that way, they're not going to let him pick his own vice president anyway. That's not how it works in Republican politics, right?
Well, in theory, if they chose him, they probably would go with his preference. But no, they have to elect the VP at the convention too.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah.
So basically, he's saying, if by some miracle I actually became the nominee, this is who I would really want as my VP pick. Which doesn't sound the same as the big announcement as your next vice president of the United States, Carly Fiorina.
Yeah, so
it was a very awkward introduction where he tried to, like, raise her hand in victory and she wasn't expecting it and it looked weird. And then she sang a little impromptu singy song.
Oh my god.
That about hanging out with his daughters.
Yeah.
What was it?
Yes. Like, so you're like on the spot. I'm on the bus and we have the bus and I'm like, what? I thought it was a joke. I literally was like,
I thought for a second it was one of those bad lip reading videos.
Yeah.
Like they had already done that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is a weird one. It's like, no, wait, this is real life.
Is she doing that in public? On the campaign trail?
And the crowd, it was that kind of thing where they were trying to laugh,
they were like,
but they're not.
It was the most awkward, uncomfortable laughter. And I only heard it on NPR, so I didn't see it in person. And
no one was sure what was happening.
Why? Well, I guess she was telling some story before that was like, oh, I used to sing to my daughters before they went to bed.
Oh, okay. Well, that context helps a little bit.
Now I'm singing to you now, but you're like, I don't think that's
no.
What
well, that context helps a little, but it doesn't mean you have to break into a weird, creepy, spontaneous song.
And it was so long. She just kept going.
Well, every second felt like an eternity, but what happened, somebody took that and like made a horror movie trailer out of it. And it was really effective.
Oh my god, it was humiliating. And really, it's just a.
Well, let's talk about what we think Cruz is trying to do with this.
He's trying to get in the news. He's losing badly.
Well, not only that, but what he can't seem to make a dent in Trump, and he knows Trump has a big woman problem.
Yeah. And Fiorina's big thing when she was running was she's the only one who stood up to Hillary. Well, Hillary. She was also talked about Hillary.
Well, I'll get to that. But mainly right here and now, it's about standing up to Trump. Because she's one of the few who did that for all the good it did her.
Sure.
And I haven't heard anything in the news in the last couple of days about her saying anything memorable about Trump. So I don't even know if the media's even paying attention.
I mean, it's so obviously just a media ploy, though. No, it's not. He's not going to be the nominee. She's not going to be the vice president. He's not going to be. I mean, it's just like,
well,
okay.
If they were close and Trump and Cruz were actually still close and it really was like, you know, up for grabs, then I think it would be a clever ploy, because I think what Cruz would ideally like to be saying is, okay, look, it's going to be very tough for somebody like Trump to really go after Hillary. He's going to be called a sexist. Of course, in his mind, unfairly, but in reality, it's because Donald Trump is going to say all kinds of horrible misogynistic
things. Oh, we're
going
to get to the woman card later.
Right. But uh-huh. in the sort of general Republican mindset, oh boy, this is really tough for us as Republicans, because any attack on Hillary Clinton might be seen as sexist.
Right.
But if I got a lady doing it.
Yeah. Women can't be sexist
right.
against
yeah.
each other. Women
right.
can't say horrific things. Yeah.
If
I mean,
I got
it's
a,
true.
If I got a lady doing it, then we're good. And what Cruz is trying to do beyond just go after Trump, and you're right, with the Hillary thing, is say, look, somebody needs to go after Hillary. Trump's not going to get away with it.
Yep.
Me and some other old dude wouldn't get away with it, but Carly could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, it's clever, but it's just too little too late, and, you know.
No.
And Carly is such an empty suit.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
What is her accomplishment? She got ran out of HP and got a golden parachute and tanked the stockholders' earnings. And, you know, that I understand that's like the conservative American dream, like ruin a company, have a bunch of people laid off, and then get a golden parachute. You know, but.
Yeah. And then I
but
guess.
But with voters, not so much?
No, not so much. They really weren't that. There was a, like, tiny period in time where they were like, oh, she's great, because she's not terrible on the debate stage if you don't know anything. The words coming out of her mouth sound okay.
But she was only on the big stage once, right?
No, I think it was two or three times. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Because she had her best lines on the kiddie table.
Yeah, that's stages. Very true. Yes, which we never usually watch those, because who
cares? No, I think we watched the first couple, and then we were like, okay, you know,
this is
insane.
Yeah. It's funny, our local, one of our local house members, Jared Polis from Boulder,
mm-hmm.
who's awesome, he was like, Ted Cruz is not going to be the nominee for president, and he got to pick a vice presidential running mate. I'm not going to be the nominee for Republican president. Mm-hmm. I think I should pick mine. And so he's doing a poll right now of who he should pick as his vice president for the Republican Party. He's a Democrat.
What are the choices?
Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker at the moment.
Those are pretty good ones.
Those are my heroes. So I thought that was pretty cute. But anyway, yeah, it's not being taken seriously by the media or by anybody. Ted Cruz was just endorsed by Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana. They have their primary next week. But again, very lukewarm endorsement. Just very like, yeah, Cruz, I guess.
Well, Mike Pence is not real popular right now.
No.
You know, he signed that really disastrous anti-LGBT bill that has all the businesses, you know, going nuts. Like,
yeah, they were the first to do that. And then, you know.
Yeah, they blazed the old trail there.
Yep. North Carolina came after and didn't learn the lesson. And then now we got... You know, Tennessee at least learned a little bit.
Yeah, Pence was kind of on the fence, and then finally. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, he knows he's back in a loser, right? But I think Trump has become so toxic that I think this is sort of... I think the Pence move is sort of an interesting canary in the coal mine, don't you think? Mm. Because, I mean, Pence knows that Cruz is dead meat, but tying himself to Donald Trump... is way worse than back in a loser.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so what's going to happen down ticket? How many incumbent or Republicans trying to pick up a seat or fight to keep their seat, how many of them are going to tie themselves to Trump? I think there's going to be some real dilemmas.
I know.
Now you got
there's
some...
There's just basically at this point no Republican politicians are tying themselves to anyone. There's like so few endorsements right now
Republican politicians. Here's the thing, and we'll get to Boehner in and his comments the last few days about Cruz. But you have two completely reviled figures at the top of the and I'm not talking about with us.
No.
I'm just talking about with Republicans.
Yes.
I mean, obviously they're reviled by us, but before we even get to that, Ted Cruz is so thoroughly despised by his own colleagues.
Yes.
In Congress.
By anyone who's ever worked with him or in lived some with cases, him roommates, or, yeah. college roommates, his wife.
I mean, they
seem
just
like
they just
much.
They just personally like
despise him. Yeah, when he worked on the Supreme Court, he was a clerk, and they all hate him.
Yeah,
all of them.
Well, let's get to what John. All right, go ahead.
We're gonna get to that later.
Okay.
Because I have to look up the response from a local group that I think you'll love, but No, you're exactly right. So Donald Trump is reviled by Republicans, and they know he'll lose. His favorability is at about 67% right now.
Unfavorability.
As is the Republican Party. So they're going to lose. I mean, they're just going
to... The question is how much.
Right.
Right.
And how humiliated do they want to be?
Right.
So, and then Cruz, yeah, just personally absolutely despised. Let's take a break real quick, and when we come back, let's talk about... what Boehner said, and...
Yeah, and the state of the Democratic race.
Uh-huh, Bernie,
all the good
Hillary,
things.
All the things.
Okay, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Blue.
Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. So we're going to talk about our friend Ted Cruz.
A little bit more.
We, of course, on our last podcast, if you heard it. If not, please check us out on Irreverent Testimony at Podbean and Stitcher iTunes. Check out the, I think the episode's called Soup's On. It's about the Chunky Soup saga, where we go into the dark depths of Ted Cruz's psyche.
And marriage.
Well, I guess it's apropos now since we're watching basketball that his latest gaffe, did you see this when he was in, well, let me ask you this. What do you call the round thing that you put the basketball in?
A hoop?
See, you know it, and you could give a crap about basketball.
I don't know anything about sports.
Well, Ted Cruz, on his home planet, they call it a basketball ring. I can't believe you didn't hear about this.
No.
Okay, well, okay, he's...
Oh, my God.
This is,
what?
I think this is the right before he announced Carly, like the day before.
Oh, my God.
He's in Indiana, and, you know, Indiana's crazy about basketball. You know,
Hoosiers
and
something?
All that.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
He was trying to reenact a scene from Hoosiers where he had...
What?
His campaign guy measure, just like, yeah, 10 feet, just like at home. And he said, yeah, the basketball rings here are 10 feet, just like at home. And he said it like twice. And even you saw people in the crowd like, the basketball rings?
What are you saying? Like, oh, my God.
It's like, who says that?
Oh, my God.
And then he tried to cover it up the next day by saying, talking about his high school basketball coach. It's like, did you really play basketball and you call it a basketball ring?
No.
I'm sure if he did, he never got off the bench, and God only knows what they did to him in the locker room. But, like, yeah, even, like, I mean, I'm not picking on Rachel. Rachel's just not a sports fan.
No, I don't care
Although
about sports
fans. She's my good luck charm when I watch the Miami Heat play, but...
Yeah, I don't ever see them lose, and by the way, they just won because I was just present,
right,
so...
Right, right, and I'm from Miami, so you can send your hate mail, you know...
ReverentTestimony@gmail.com.
But, as... So divorced from sports and not knowing anything about it, you know enough that it's a basketball hoop,
What's
not a basketball
hoop?
Ring.
I call it sports match, so like even I know it's called a hoop.
Well, I saw him do it in real time because MSNBC was covering
oh my
it
God.
For some reason. Right away, I went to Twitter and I say, did he really just call it a basketball ring?
Oh
and
my God.
Yeah, now it's big news.
That's
because
amazing.
Ted Cruz is not of this planet.
And like the thing that about that that's interesting, like if Bernie Sanders said that, no one would care. But there's
well,
this
yeah,
sort of
he's
like...
Well, yeah, the funny old man said something funny, but
and,
see, Bernie would
know. But there's
know.
This, like, sort of fundamental,
and Bernie
like...
did play basketball in high school, by the way. He's pretty good.
Okay. But yeah. There's this fundamental, like, machismo culture in the Republican Party among men.
Yeah.
Right? That's, like, kind of a hit on him. Like, that's bad.
But that falls in line. They hate his guts.
They do.
I mean, his
yes.
fellow... You think that we hate Ted Cruz, and ladies, for good reason, hate Ted
yeah.
Cruz. And all the people... Nobody hates Ted Cruz more than his Republican colleagues.
Than people
Nobody.
That know him, frankly. Not even, just like anyone who's ever met the man hates him. But specifically, we're going to talk about one high-profile person who hates him.
Oh, you mean Boehner?
Yeah.
So John Boehner, who's the happiest retiree on the planet.
Yes. He used to be the Speaker of the House.
He was so happy to not have that job anymore.
He got pushed out by the Freedom Caucus crazies.
Uh-huh, the crazy caucus.
And now Paul Ryan's the
and
House.
Paul Ryan jumped up on that cross for some reason.
For
I have no idea why
God,
still.
God, no. And he did an interview with, what was it? I can't remember.
Oh, I don't know.
It was like GQ or something. I can't remember.
No, this wasn't in an interview. This was at a live thing the other day.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Anyway, he said... had some very choice words about Ted Cruz.
Well,
he
I think the question was who do you prefer? And he said, well, definitely. I think he said something to the effect of definitely not Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is the devil incarnate.
He's the most. I've never met a more miserable son of a bitch in my life. That came out of John Boehner's mouth. I've never met a more miserable
so,
son of a bitch in my life.
He was so happy saying it. He was
oh
just,
my God. And the thing that's interesting is we have to remember that John Boehner was the House of Representatives.
Cruz is
speaker,
in the Senate.
He's in the Senate, but he worked directly with the Tea Party Freedom Caucus people to oust John Boehner. And
right.
So he hates him. So anyway, and then he said something, yeah, like he is Lucifer in the flesh or something. And that was funny, but it... pissed off some people that
well,
we
that, that's
feel...
the first, that's the first thing I thought was like, I bet some actual Satanists are not going to be happy with that.
And we are not. I consider myself an atheist, but I most closely align myself with the Satanists because of their platform, and I encourage you to read it if you don't already know what it is. The Satanists are these people that you can see in the media sometimes protesting abortion restrictions by pouring milk over women. So they call it forced motherhood.
Right.
They're amazing, but this is what the Satanic Temple, Lucian Graves, who's the head of the Satanic Temple, came out and said about this.
And they always have cool, like, heavy metal names, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Quote, Boehner's comment is illustrative of how well past time it is to adjust our mythologies to reflect our realities. Cruz's failures of reason, compassion, decency, and humanity are products of his Christian pandering, if not an actual Christian faith. It grows tedious when pedophile priests and loathsome politicians are conveniently dismissed as satanic, even as they spew biblical verse and prostrate themselves before the cross, recruiting the Christian faithful. Satanists will have nothing to do with any of them, because we consider ourselves, right? Reason, compassion, decency, and humanity are all tenets of the Satanic Church.
Yeah, yeah.
Autonomy.
A couple things, though. And I appreciate what they're saying, but obviously, you know, John Boehner is not saying that Ted Cruz is, like, a member of the Church of Satan or
obviously
something.
Obviously not. But
And also, here's another thing. There's plenty of cover for Boehner to say whatever he wants about Cruz, because Cruz is not going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people, oh, would he actually pick Hillary over Cruz? It's like, he's not going to have to pick Cruz over anybody. Cruz is not going to win. He's done.
Yeah, somebody said the other day, like, he picked his fellow orange face cohort, Donald Trump.
I don't think he's a big fan of Trump either. He just despises Cruz.
Well, and they were
saying nobody really cares what Boehner has to say.
The difference is not just what happened in the Senate and the House, but also just their personalities are really different. Like, John Boehner's this sort of kind of weepy, sentimental, wine-drinking Northeastern guy.
He always looks a little boozy, yeah.
And then you've got Ted Cruz, who's this ambitious, moral, smug, weasel-faced Texan with a lot of ambition, and they just are, like, they just don't go
together. They're oil
together.
And water.
Yeah. But getting back to the Satanist thing, I didn't mean to suggest that John Boehner actually was calling him Satan, but I thought it was really funny that, like, you know, the Satan, because the Satanic Church is essentially a political organization.
Yeah.
They are a church, and they get away with a lot of really interesting things
they do that for tax-exempt
they do it to protest religious freedom. So
right.
If you're going to put the nativity scene up at the courthouse, they're going to put a statue of, you know.
Well, it's not always them, but they do a lot of that.
I mean, that's sort of their platform is like, if you're going to have one religion, we're going to insist that you have ours as well.
Well, no, I'm speaking from experience, because in Miami, in South Florida, you had some controversy sometimes with the nativity scenes with the Jews down there.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Also a menorah.
Sure, sure. But I think the point of what they're doing is kind of like trolling.
Oh, absolutely. It's trolling. Yeah.
Like, they're going to have a Baphomet statue.
But trolling within the law. They know the laws.
Yes.
And they highlight. And it, sometimes it's self-defeating, because then it just galvanizes. Well, look, the Church of Satan doesn't like it, so it must be righteous. But then at the same time, it brings to light the violations of these laws that these state legislators.
The separation of church and state violations. Absolutely. Right. And also they do a lot for, like, prayers in school. They do a lot you know, for women's health and women's reproductive rights.
Yeah, it takes the goddamn Church of Satan to keep the separation of church and state honest in many places in our country.
That's right.
It's like, because the politicians won't do it.
They'd rather take down the nativity scene than put up Baphomet, and so we win.
Yeah.
Either way, we win. It's brilliant, and they are heroes of mine, and I love them. Okay, so that's the Ted Cruz kind of wrap up there, I think.
Well, is it? I mean, is that all we got on Ted? We got the Carly thing, which nobody cares about.
No.
Well, I just want to talk about Cruz some more. He's just a fascinating figure in a lot of ways, pathetic and gross and weird, but, like, interesting. It's just how reviled he is. You remember what Bob Dole said about him, right?
No.
Bob Dole basically said the same thing as Boehner. And Bob Dole is still alive, to my surprise. He's got to be like 110.
He was old when I was in junior high running for president.
You would think a Dole of all person, the first person he would get out and scream about would be a Clinton. But no, the first person he wanted to run and scream about wasn't even Trump. It was Ted Cruz.
That's the interesting thing. Like, everybody hates her on that side, but They don't really want to talk about it. They really want to talk about how much they don't like Ted Cruz personally. Like, really, like, that would be like,
well,
what we
let
want
me
to
get back
about.
To the Boehner thing for a second, because, I mean, we had a good chuckle at it, but the ironic thing is, not that it matters anymore, but Boehner coming out and saying Ted Cruz sucks actually helps Ted Cruz, because Boehner is so despised by the GOP base.
So is Cruz.
Not the base.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, the base just likes Trump better, because Trump doesn't dog whistle, he just whistles.
Yeah.
But the base despises Boehner. I mean, you know, the base was fine with him getting forced out, basically.
Instrumental in.
Well, right. So my point is, like, wow, isn't this crazy? Like, the former Speaker of the House hates one of the leading Republican candidates. Yeah, well, that would actually benefit him if it still mattered.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
But you're right. I mean, the reason Boehner's allowed to say that he's the most miserable son of a bitch he's ever met in his life is because he's not going to win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also, nobody cares about Boehner. But I do want to talk about Trump, because I've got a couple stories. One, I don't know if you're familiar with or not, but there's some Trump stuff, so...
Yeah, yeah. Before you get into that, I'll just comment real quick that, you know, a lot of people are talking about, like, well, when we get to the general, all this stuff about Hillary and all this stuff about Bernie come out. It's like, there is so much stuff about Trump that the media just hasn't even bothered with, because they're just reporting on the sideshow. And once he really starts getting vetted as the candidate to be president, and I guess that's some of what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, this is going to be a rough one. So, there was a woman who did a story for, this one was the GQ magazine, about Melania Trump.
Okay.
It was a profile piece.
I know where you're going.
About her.
Ouch.
And it wasn't particularly unflattering, and Melania Trump is an intensely private person. But it wasn't like she's the greatest human being to ever live.
I didn't read it, so
I haven't either.
I have no frame of reference. But I've heard other people report that it was fairly neutral, if not a little complimentary.
And really, really, really intensely vetted by their legal team. They also had Slovenian lawyers come in, which is where she's from. They had a vast amount of fact checkers. They really wanted to make sure that every word in the story was accurate.
I didn't
and
know that part.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
So what happened was the story came out, and Melania came out on her Facebook page and expressed displeasure with the article. Just said that, you know, that she felt like this reporter had invaded her family's privacy, and that there were a number of discrepancies, that things that were untrue.
Now, didn't you say that her whole team vetted the whole story before letting it go, though?
Yes.
The final version before final edits, or?
No. So Melania Trump had nothing to do with it, but GQ magazine had a team of fact checkers
I thought you meant Melania's people gave it the green light. Okay.
No.
Okay.
But fact-checkers came in and made sure that there was absolutely nothing that could not be verified within the article that was written. Every single word was verified as true with multiple sources.
Okay.
So when she came out, it was very vague about what was untrue. She has still not come out and said anything specific that was a discrepancy that was untrue.
Right.
What happened was, she put that Facebook post, Melania Trump did. And a white supremacist group got a hold of it and reposted it. And posted to their members a thing calling her, like, Empress Trump or something, and saying that...
Well, it's important to note that the writer of this article is Jewish.
Correct, yeah. And she is a first-generation immigrant, or a second-generation. Her parents immigrated here. Anyway, she's Jewish. And this white supremacist group came and basically said to their followers, here is her information. They doxed her, basically. And they said, you should let her know how you feel. And this woman got some of the more vile comments I've ever heard. And internet comments are bad.
Yeah.
But this was stuff like, you know, back to the ovens with Jews, and she'd make a nice lampshade, and
because understand, Trump is big with the white supremacists.
Yes, he is.
This is something that the media generally doesn't talk about. MSNBC does a little bit, and we do, you know, and some radio people do, but Trump is big with the white supremacists,
because he doesn't dog whistle, he whistles.
Right. Right. This is their guy. They've been waiting for a guy like this.
Yeah. And you insult his wife because they're also all MRAs, obviously.
Right.
So anyway, one of the weirdest parts of this that was happening to her was she was getting calls all times of day and night. And it was follow-up calls from requests she had supposedly made to companies who come to your house to clean up homicides.
Jesus.
So people were using her information to call cleanup companies to say there's been a murder at this particular house, and then that cleanup company would call her and say, we heard there was a homicide at your home. Do you need cleanup? That level of vile, hateful, scary stuff.
All over an article that Melania Trump claims did something she didn't like.
But really, she wasn't specific about anything. It wasn't a hit piece. It wasn't particularly cruel. And, you know, to this reporter's point, she was saying, like, I understand that she's an intensely private person, but she's also the wife of the front runner of the Republican nomination for president.
Whether you like it or not, you're a public figure now. So you can refuse to do interviews, certainly. You can refuse to go on record for articles like this. But you can't expect that people aren't going to want to know who you are.
Yeah.
Guess what? People who are your supporters are going to want to know who you are.
Too.
And you can just be a pretty face and not anything else if you want. But people are going to ask questions. They're going to look into your background. They're going to report things for better or for worse.
Look at the shit that they've done to Michelle Obama.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
I mean, the vetting and the craziness there.
The lies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so I feel for these women. I feel for anyone, you know.
Yeah, and you have a lot of figures who didn't want any part of it and were really private. Like, Bess Truman absolutely hated being First Lady, you know, top to bottom.
Yeah. And I do feel bad. I do. But I also feel like, well, then, you know.
Of course.
And as a married couple, well, that's a conversation that you have to have.
Which magazine was it again? Was it
GQ?
GQ. Mm-hmm. Now, has Donald threatened to sue GQ yet?
No.
Oh, that would be shocking if he didn't.
He will, definitely. But I think the larger issue that they were talking about today was the idea that he wants to loosen up the libel laws and start going after journalists and papers and the press.
Right.
And be able to sue and to really sort of tamp down.
Yeah, because imagine if President Trump, I mean, guess what? When you're president, you get negative crap written about you all the time.
Every day.
Good, all the time. Good, bad, or otherwise from your allies,
and
from your
enemies. He wants to be Kim Jong-il. He wants to be able to sue you, put you in jail, make you shut up, because he is the most fragile ego of any person. Classic narcissist.
He's megalomaniacal. And he's extremely insecure.
Yes.
And yeah, it would be nuts. I mean, the Bush administration was like that to an extent.
But not like this.
Not like this would be. This would be insane.
Uh-huh. 100%. So that was one Trump thing that happened. And really seriously, like, some of the comments that this reporter received are, I can't even. They are
really, really vile. Basic internet trolling. Where horrible, awful men tell you they're going to rape you.
I hope you get raped. I wish I'd push you down the stairs. Yeah, I want to kill you. You should die. I hope your dog dies. Like, horrible shit. This was, like, next level kind of, like, anti-Semitic, anti-woman, just really vile
But you were right. By white supremacist group, who, again, are Donald Trump's most vociferous allies. They make robocalls on his behalf.
Yeah.
They flyer on his behalf.
Yeah.
And it's a little squicky. The media doesn't really want to touch this because this is the major party candidate. We can't really, can we really admit that?
I think that...
I'm talking about the Beltway Press. We can do it till we're blue in the face.
No, I mean they should.
Well, of course they should. But
they aren't yet.
For the most part, they don't.
So anyway, the other Trump story for the week.
Mm-hmm.
The woman card.
Oh.
Tell that.
This is
Give
so,
some background.
This is so good. So Donald, fresh off his big win in his wins, he ran the table in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, right?
Yeah.
He immediately, instead of going after Cruz, he went right after Hillary.
Yep.
And what he said was basically... Hillary plays the woman card, and if she wasn't a woman, she'd only have like 5% support. She has no qualifications.
And women don't even like her.
And blah, blah, blah. So, you know.
The woman card.
And Hillary's eyes lit up. And
oh, my God. She was so excited.
It was like, I think it was like an hour later. She had her speech, and she said, you're damn right I'm playing the woman card, because the woman card means equal pay and
if that means I'm fighting for women's reproductive rights and paid family leave and... and equal pay.
She made
some
bad card pun. She said, deal me in or
yeah,
Joker's
deal me
wild
in or whatever. Or, yeah, something like that. But like, oh my God. And then I got about 17 fundraising emails about the woman card from Emily's List and Hillary Clinton campaign and Planned Parenthood. And I mean,
well here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? Because if Trump is eventually the nominee, and it looks like he's going to be.
Yeah.
You've given over the entire Republican Party to the hard misogynist wing.
Yes.
I mean, they're not even going to pretend anymore. You know, Rush Limbaugh he's all in for Trump, right? These types. These are the types that the crazy New York people who are horrible misogynists and some other folks like that. So they're in this real groupthink delusion that they can maybe win over women voters, something, some economic message. Yep. And women don't really like Hillary Clinton. Because
she stayed with Bill. They have this delusion that women don't like Hillary Clinton because she's weak because she stayed with Bill after the affair.
Right, right.
Which is like, do you seriously think women are going to vote? Are that petty? Like, I would like to vote. I do not vote on the basis of whether or not someone stayed with their cheating, philandering husband. I vote on a person's policy proposals that directly affect my life and the life of people around me and the life of people that have less of a voice than those in power.
Well,
because I'm
a rational
voter.
Of
I don't
course.
Give a shit who sucked Bill Clinton's dick. I care that you're not going to defund Planned Parenthood and shut down abortion clinics and limit my access to reproductive health care and
yeah.
that you're going to give paid family leave to women who have children and men who have children, by the way.
Yes.
And not have a global gag rule and support. I mean, these are issues that matter to me, and the Republican might think whatever brain, I hesitate to call it that, sort of doesn't understand that. They think that we're just like these petty, catty Real Housewives that are like, I mean, she stayed with Bill. I'm never going to vote for her.
Right.
I'd rather vote for Trump, who's going to strip away
my
rights.
Well, think of the stupidity of that, that even the Lewinsky affair itself didn't damage the Clinton brand.
Yeah.
I mean, it did.
Well, it damaged Hillary more than it did Bill.
It did in the media, right?
Mm-hmm.
But his approvals actually went up. And had he been allowed to run for another term, he would have won.
Well, his approvals didn't go up during the thing, but now they're much higher.
Well, even immediately
he's
afterwards.
He's beloved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a beloved ex-president.
And the people who hated his guts after the affair are the same people who hated his guts before.
Yeah, they just had more ammo.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this groupthink delusion that, A, that's going to matter, but it's deeper than that. They think that, well, here's a couple things they think, that Bernie hasn't really gone after Hillary, so Hillary's never been pummeled the way that Trump pummels like Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz, and that she'll wilt under that pressure.
Are you kidding me right now?
So they forget that she's like, they forget about the 11-hour Benghazi witch hunt.
Let's start way before that.
Yeah.
Let's start back at Whitewater. Let's start back at when he was running for president. Let's go to Hillary Care.
How about Rick Lazio during her Senate campaign, where Rick Lazio took that same exact thing? It's like, I'm going to be the tough bully in the room, and I'm going to show this little girl. And she wiped the floor with him in the debates.
Yeah.
And won so easily.
Yes.
Like, she hasn't been through this and won already.
Hillary is the most vetted candidate probably ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
She's been in office. She's been the first lady. She's been the governor's wife. She's been a senator. She's been the secretary of state. She has gone through the Benghazi hearings. She's gone through, like, there's nothing. You cannot shake this woman.
Well, here's the thing, though. They're in denial about that.
Yeah.
So the misogyny is just, even if it wasn't Trump, but because it is Trump, I mean, it's just going to get ramped up to 11.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to go off the rails and off the charts.
Yep.
And Hillary is very smart because, A, she's trolling Trump into doing more.
Yeah.
And, B, she knows it's a winner. And
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And even if you know it's completely politically calculated, it's striking the right chords. Is it not the female right next to me I'm talking to?
Yes. Yes. It certainly is.
Right.
I mean, I already know that the other side are sort of at the worst, total, actual misogynists, like, hate women.
Mm-hmm.
And at their best, totally blind to their own privilege and stupid and ignorant about women's issues.
Right.
But I think that a lot of women who are maybe not paying attention all the time constantly because they're busy check in once in a while and look at this and think, oh, okay, so he hates women. Okay. Or like, that was really awful and I wouldn't allow my husband to speak to me that way.
Well,
or,
his approval with women, isn't it something like 20-75 underwater?
Correct.
Yeah.
Even among Republican women,
uh-huh.
He's, I think the statistic is like 27% of women overall support Trump.
Granted, and we've talked about this before, approval does not necessarily always translate to votes. But when it's that lopsided,
yeah.
That's something.
And women, let's remind everybody.
53% of the voting population.
53% of the voting population. You
yeah.
can't win without women.
No.
You can't.
Nope.
So Trump is, I mean, Trump's going to lose for a myriad of reasons, but he's going to lose.
Well, doesn't he almost, if he's serious about winning, doesn't he almost have to pick a female running mate?
Does that matter? I think people...
Like, no, I'm not talking if it's going to matter to the electorate. Does it matter to Trump and his team what they think they have to do?
Right.
Like, so...
I mean, that's what Romney did.
And you mean McCain?
I mean McCain. Yeah, that's, I'm sorry. Obviously.
Come on,
that's
let's
what
McCain go easy did. On Paul Ryan.
hey. It's so terrible to be called a woman.
Well, no, I don't know what you were trying to say about
McCain. That's what McCain did. He picked a woman because he assumed. I think he picked Palin because it was like, well, we can't have two white dudes if there's going to be a black dude. You know what I mean?
That was part of it. But, you know, you saw Game Change. They thought it was something new and fresh and exciting, and she was a fresh face. She was a nut, and she was an egomaniac and horribly unqualified.
And it had to do with the fact that she was a woman.
So she'll probably be Trump's running mate.
Probably.
That would be so great.
That would
great.
Be too much.
I know.
That would be too much.
That would be so good, though. I mean, why not? You know? If this whole thing is just a big friggin', you know, reality show goof, I mean, why not Palin? Isn't it perfect?
Yeah, sure. Or just pick a Real Housewife. I don't know any of them. I don't watch that shit.
There's a Real Housewives of Brooklyn or Upper East Side or something, right?
Oh, pick a place where he needs votes. Is there like one in like...
Texas? No,
he doesn't need that.
No.
I don't know.
He actually might in this election.
Yeah,
the
right?
Mormons hate him so much that the last poll I saw, he was leading in Utah. I don't think she'll win, but...
And then, you know, the other interesting thing about just kind of the horse race stuff was that Cruz and... Kasich kind of had like a truce, I guess.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, do we even want to talk about that? Because that didn't even last 24 hours. Like, the media got breathlessly excited about it.
Yeah.
Trump and Cruz had supposedly teamed up for a...
No, Kasich and Cruz.
Kasich and Cruz, sorry, had supposedly teamed up to do a Stop Trump...
Never Trump.
Super Friends Voltron,
something
like
that.
Yeah. You know, loser powers activate. And it didn't work out. It didn't work out after, like, I think an hour. Like, they asked Kasich about it. And they're like, so you're saying vote for Cruz? And no, vote for me. And then the whole thing fell apart.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. There is no way to stop this freight train.
No.
Unless they just completely go kangaroo court at the convention and just change the rules to basically say, oh, well, we changed the rules and Trump loses. You know, no matter how many delegates he has.
Yeah. It looks like he's going to get 1237. That's the general consensus.
And, you know, there might be more will to do that if the next man up wasn't so reviled by everybody.
Exactly. Like, they picked the worst. Well, the Republican voters is who you have to blame. Picked the worst second. Everyone hates him.
They picked the two most reviled people on the planet, almost.
I know, like, at least, like, Jeb, Rubio, I mean...
They weren't horrible enough people. They weren't
they
enough
weren't
garbage
quite
people
as
for the
much,
Republican
they
base.
They weren't quite garbage people enough. God. I mean, they did it to themselves. I can't feel bad for them.
No, I don't feel... I'm just fascinated by it. I don't feel bad for a second.
We should talk about what's been going on with the Dems. Yeah?
What's going on with the Dems? Okay, so for all the talk about never Bernie, never Hillary, and the party splitting up, what's basically happening now, even though Jane Sanders says some weird things...
Which you'll have to tell me about, because I didn't follow that. But let's talk first about what happened on Tuesday.
Well, Hillary won big in every state except for Rhode Island.
Yep.
And so she increased her lead to the point where basically it's over.
Yes.
And Bernie is not dropping out.
No.
Even though his one congressional supporter is now telling him to drop out.
Who's that?
The guy from Oregon. Merkley.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he changed tack pretty quick, but...
I'm sorry, I'm so behind on some of this, because...
Yeah.
It's been a crazy week, but... Yeah, so I heard that he
This is what Bernie's saying now, basically. He's saying, I'm not dropping out, but he's laid off a whole bunch of staff, and... Mm-hmm. And he's basically saying, okay, what our job is now, and he's saying this in his speeches, our job is to set the platform at the DNC.
Yes.
And basically, this is what I said months ago.
Yes.
Was going to happen.
Yes.
And what a lot of people said.
And he said, I want to get as many delegates as possible, which is why I'm not dropping out. Because right. The more delegates we have at the DNC, the stronger our platform for the Democratic Party will be for the general.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. I think when you go back to 2008 and Team Clinton kind of went to Team Obama in the same fashion when she was ready to sort of step back and said, okay, well, you know, this is going to be the agenda, you know, to get our supporters, you need to agree to take on parts of our agenda. Like, there was really no daylight between Obama and Hillary on much of anything.
There isn't between Bernie and Hillary that much.
There's more.
Think about it. Back then, we thought there was a lot. It's always... This is why I hate the end of primary season.
I kind of even knew back then. This is why the Puma thing was a head slapper for me.
Yeah.
It's like these two basically have the exact same platform. Hillary more hawkish than Obama. And Obama he didn't do the Iraq vote and... They had some minor disagreements on how to proceed with the healthcare plan and some very minor differences on taxes. And other than that, everything was lockstep. Bernie and Hillary, it's mostly, as far as policy goes, on the same page, but there are some important differences.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think what I meant was from a platform, like a general, a kind of like... worldview, I think, okay, maybe that's not a good way to put it.
They have a very
different worldview. But sure. You know what I mean? Like, where the party needs to be going. Obviously, Bernie has influenced her campaign a lot. I don't think that she would have been this progressive, this focus on economic equality, that kind of stuff, without Bernie having run.
Well, they've got some differences to iron out. I mean, if Bernie goes to her and says, you want my support, you have to disavow super PACs. It's like, well, she's going to have to take super PAC money to win a general election.
So would he have?
Well, right. And again, I'm not assuming what he's... But, and then what if he says you have to absolutely reject... Well, he's not going to say that. But he's going to be like, you have to be more aggressively, forget this incremental stuff. You have to push to get my support. You have to push for your universal health care right now. She's not going to do that.
No.
Forget your $12 an hour federal. I want it to go to 15 right now.
Yeah, we could do that.
No, I don't think she would, actually.
I would.
Well, I don't think she would.
And she wants universal health care. Let's not be in some fantasy land where Hillary Clinton doesn't want universal health care.
Well, this is my question, though. He's not in the biggest, as great a bargaining position as he thinks, because a lot of his supporters, and us included, again, we caucused for Bernie.
Yes, I have a Bernie Sanders sign in my yard. It's not my sign, but...
Right. Yeah. But we were happy to take Hillary Clinton as a close second.
Mm-hmm.
And most of his supporters, regardless of what they're saying now, will. So does he have all this leverage he thinks he has to sort of force her hand to do all this stuff? Or does she just say, look, Bernie, you're going to be the next housing and urban development guy or in my cabinet or... You know, I don't think that... The negotiations to get the firm 100%, endorsement that she gave Obama is going to be that simple.
I'm going to be a little more cynical, and I'm going to say that I think that this is publicly, Bernie is. This is a strategic. What's happening right now?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So Bernie and Hillary both know Hillary's going to get the nomination.
Of course,
they both know there's a lot of pushback on Bernie's supporters. Bernie can't just do what Hillary did and come out and be like, vote Obama. He's got to kind of put up a show for them because they are sort of disenfranchised, not involved in the process, and hate her. He's kind of got to do this thing where he's like, look, I'm going to strong arm her,
right,
and then you vote for her.
Right.
Because he needs to sort of trick them into being like, it's okay, I got I got the platform, and she's got to stick to it, and I won on this, and I won on that, and you can vote for her now because now she has my platform. It's sort of a way for him to be like, look, we need party unity, and I know you don't want to vote for her, but you fucking have to, because it can't be Trump. So whatever we need to tell you to make you vote for her, we'll do. And she can do whatever she wants, ultimately, but he needs to have some sort of, like, public leverage to make his supporters feel not so disenfranchised by him losing.
Yes, but I don't think it's a trick. I think he genuinely, passionately believes in this stuff, and I genuinely...
I'm not saying he doesn't believe in it. I'm saying... this move, this shift in what he's doing and how he's kind of framing it in the media and to his supporters is a way of kind of massaging them into, when he eventually gives his speech in July in Pittsburgh, they're like, well, but we really won because this happened. It's bullshit, but like, they need to feel like they have some ownership in the party or they're going to leave. Right?
Right. Right. Yeah, I guess I see it a little differently. I think you're absolutely right in what he's doing to... Well, look, it's important that he's keeping his supporters involved, even though they might be obnoxious on Twitter and, you know, some of them say horrible things about Bernie and idiots like Susan Sarandon said bring on President Trump because...
That'll start the revolution or some nonsense.
Right, because the Nader movement was so great for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Hillary, you know, at a certain point, you certainly could put your foot down and be like, well, you know, I won, so it's my platform. So, you know, we can find plenty of common ground here, but, you know, I'm not going to just take your platform and wear it. I won.
But she's a pragmatist, and she understands that for party unity... She's going to have to let Bernie do a little egotistical grandstanding for his supporters.
Sure.
And then she'll take over and do her thing. But she needs to give him a minute to, like, rally them and make them feel like they're engaged and powerful still. And then she'll do whatever she wants. You're right. She's not going to wear his platform.
Yeah.
But she'll be like, oh, yeah. And she'll say nice things about him, and he'll say nice things about her.
But Bernie's no party loyalist either.
No, he's not.
He's got much less to lose. Now, of course,
he could... I think that's untrue just in terms of his legacy.
Well, sure, his legacy, yeah. But, you know, it depends. What does he want to do? I mean, he's only now a Democrat.
Right.
Does he want to sort of lead this party going forward? Or does he want to say, well, the hell with this party, it's not good enough, and we're going to do our own thing? I mean, I don't think he would do that now and risk a President Trump.
No, he already said he won't, but Trump's pushing him to do it. Did you see that article?
Yeah, but like, Bernie gives a shit what Trump
says. No, obviously not. But, Trump is not trying to court Bernie supporters. But anyway, no, I don't... He's not going to run as an independent. He said, no matter what...
He's not going to run as an independent. I just mean going forward, his role in the party, if there is one. Or does he just go back to being the curmudgeonly...
Independent from Vermont
who does his thing.
I think he'd be happier doing that than he would be, like, the secretary of something something in Washington.
But he's got all this newfound clout and power.
Yeah, I know.
So...
I don't know. I don't know.
And he chose to run as a Democrat. Not only because it was the only way to win, but you would think, or you would hope at least, because it was his attempt to try to reform the party.
Yeah.
And now he's got an opportunity to do that in a way... just below being the nominee.
You think he's going to be like Howard Dean?
Yeah, he could be.
Yeah?
I don't know that he's got, you know, maybe the sort of same energy and vision to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not fair of me to say because he draws these huge crowds and has all these people interested and motivated.
He's got energy and vision, but sort of like... Yeah, discipline maybe.
Well, a lot of people in the party aren't real crazy about him. And not just because he's had this contentious fight with Hillary.
He's not a Democrat.
He's not been
working his entire career to further the Democratic Party on down ballot and on everything else. He caucuses with us in the House and now the Senate, but he hasn't done shit for our party.
That's why I hope the common ground can be reached. And Hillary can say, hey, Bernie, you're right. I really am. I mean, this is them, like, actually talking one-on-one without any reporters around.
Yeah.
Saying, actually, Bernie, I really am excited. It's great you've brought all these people into the process. Help, you know, I want you to help reform this party moving forward. And he'll say, well, if you're serious about that, then you got to do this, this, and that. And that's when the real negotiations begin.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's going to go, is my point.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to be as simple that, as telegraphed as we all saw coming with Obama and Clinton, just because we knew a couple things. We knew that there was no real daylight between their positions. They were basically exactly the same. And B, we knew that Hillary was going to wind up somewhere in his cabinet, if not as his VP.
I never thought she'd do VP.
No, I know she wasn't going to be VP. They explored it. They looked at it and sniffed it.
Well, the media
and
just couldn't help themselves from insisting, and I was
she wanted it. She wanted it. She asked for it.
Really?
Yeah, she did, and they thought about it.
I didn't think that was ever going to happen.
And they on Secretary of State.
I am glad. It's a much better place for her, and especially now, going into 2016. Being the VP does not give her nearly the experience that she got as being the
It would have been just as good,
Secretary.
And then there would have been no Benghazi
I completely disagree. The foreign policy experience that she gained from being the Secretary of State is not... You don't get anywhere close to that as Vice President, depending on what kind of Vice President you are.
Does that matter to voters?
It will in the debates, if there are any.
A VP that's leaving a popular president who's leaving office always is... automatically a top level.
Well, I'm a voter and it matters to me because she knows everything.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Biden would have been a very viable candidate had he decided to run from early on. I'm not saying he would have won. He would have been viable. G.H.W. Bush did not do anything terribly interesting of note as VP under Reagan, but Reagan was a popular president, so he just
a one-term president, too.
He was a one-termer, sure, but, I mean, he got it, right?
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Gore should have won, basically did win, save for, you know, the Supreme Court. So, anyway, we can argue about that. But her political future would have been fine as VP. But she didn't, but I would like to get into some VP speculation. Or we want to talk any more about what's happening on the Democratic side?
No, I think that we're good there. I think in terms of her VP, because we're going to just talk about it like it's her, right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah. I'm still going Castro Brothers, one of them.
Yeah, I think so, too. The latest buzz is two interesting names, so I'm going to throw these at you.
Okay.
Tim Kaine.
Oh, my God, again with this guy. No.
It's boring and
milquetoast, white, boring. Stop with the Tim Kaine already. What is the Democratic Party's obsession with this guy? I don't understand.
You just explained it. Milquetoast, white, well-known.
Throw up in my mouth a little bit. There's nothing wrong with him. He's just he's nothing.
He's the most
boring human being on the planet. So he's so not offensive that let's just put him on some ticket. They're just dying to put him on a ticket. It's like, what? No, stop it.
He's John Edwards without the infidelity.
Oh my God.
So he's like a boring John Edwards.
A boringer. I can't even with this Tim Kaine bullshit. Jesus Christ.
Well,
okay.
At least the John Edwards diddling made it for an interesting story, right?
I was going to kill that man. I swear to God. When he...
I always...
You do not get to run for president in my party while you're cheating on your cancer wife and having a mistress baby thing. Like,
always creeped me out.
I mean, too.
I remember watching him versus Cheney, who is the most evil person on the face of the earth, and remember thinking, like, wow, Cheney's actually coming across more likable than Edwards.
Well, he came across more authentic.
Yeah.
Like, Cheney's evil, but, like, he's authentically evil.
Yeah. He's Palpatine.
And, yes, John Edwards is like, I don't know what's behind that fucking southern smile thing, but it is gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
it's
who
like
else?
Car salesman, like, oh, ambulance chasing lawyer.
10. Yeah. It's like a sheen, this constant sheen of lies or something. I don't like him. But anyway, who's next? Tim Kaine and?
Well, I was going to say Tim Kaine because he's from Virginia. Virginia is a fairly crucial swing state, and it's a must-win state for Trump. But yeah, he's not that interesting.
No.
But the other name is that I've seen floated around, and I don't think there's any merit to it. That's Elizabeth Warren.
Dream ticket, but no.
Just to double and triple down on the old woman card.
Yeah, no. Elizabeth Warren is everyone's dream running mate. She's never going to take that office.
No, she won't.
She won't accept it. I think she may have a presidential run in her future.
But let's not say that the vice president is meaningless. It's this tie-breaking Senate vote. And we're going to have a very, very close Senate.
Do you know what Benjamin Franklin called the vice presidency?
Something really dirty.
He said that you should refer to them as your superfluous excellency.
Did he say that while getting a blowjob in France and drinking whiskey?
I don't know, but it's pretty brilliant. You literally have no job. Unless the Senate is tied, which almost never happens.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
That's not true.
When was the last time the vice president voted on something?
Cheney, I remember, voted multiple times, as did Gore.
No!
Yes.
All right, we're going to look that up.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, other than that, it depends on the type of vice president you are. Some of them are really involved.
Well,
some of them
away
really
from the
aren't.
At I'm, all times, and you never know when that's going to happen, right?
That's the only thing about the vice presidency that matters. Really, in like terms of policy or doing anything, it depends on what type of vice president you are. It depends on how involved.
Well, Cheney
hold on.
Was the de facto president.
It depends on how involved the president allows you to be.
Sure.
So if you are George W. Bush. And you know nothing.
And you're going to go vacation half the time.
Yeah, Dick Cheney's the president, essentially.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're Obama and
Biden, now that he's doing legacy stuff.
But really, like, what are Joe Biden's major policy initiatives in the last 8 years?
Biden was fairly involved with Obamacare. He was involved with all the bailouts. He was involved with some other financial stuff. He's done some stuff.
Come on.
Well, he's mostly there to leer at women.
To be a gaffe machine and, like, you know, kind of the goofy guy and Obama's, like, bulldog. But really, I can't think of anything other than, like, this cancer initiative and then... That's all I got.
Well,
some Obamacare stuff, but really, like, the guy is...
But
as
for Elizabeth Warren, don't we prefer her in the Senate where she can do a lot
more?
Yes,
I prefer her exactly where she is, and so does she.
Or president.
Yeah, either one. Yeah.
Unless it was going to be like a house of cards, like if Hillary was to sell it as this is going to be like a co-presidency, guys.
Oh my God! Well, they would definitely get the Bernie supporters then. I also love Cory Booker. I'm completely enamored with him. But he's
yeah,
not
I don't
quite
think he's experienced
enough.
Well, neither the Castro brothers.
It's a vice presidency. And you don't have to be. That's what I'm saying. It can be anybody.
Here's the thing.
Booker needs a little more time in the Senate because we can't have two Obamas.
If it was going to be a Cruz or a Jeb or a Kasich, then Hillary might be more worried. Let's get completely cynical for a moment. Hillary might be more worried about protecting her flank, as it were, by picking one of the Castro brothers for the.
Well, it's Texas and it's the Latino vote. Sure. Right. Thanks, Netroots Radio, first of all, for having us on. It's been absolutely. An honor for us, and we're super excited.
Thanks to all our friends, Arliss Bunny, Will McLeod, Kay Grow, Greg Dworkin, Tom Cheevers, The Left Podcast, anybody we're forgetting.
Yeah, you guys have all been tremendously amazing, supportive, and we really appreciate it.
Yep.
We have tons of past episodes if you want to go back. They're all basically like this, or better.
Probably a little better.
Irreverent Testimony. .podbean.com, is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Just look up Irreverent Testimony.
Just look up Irreverent Testimony.
We're all over the place. At Irreverent Duo Twitter. I believe we're on Facebook, but we never check it. And hate mail to irreverenttestimony@gmail.com.
We love to read things from our viewers and get your feedback, so please do that.
Our listeners even, too.
And our listeners, that's what I meant. You know what I mean.
Well, we have a YouTube live channel. You can see our faces
we
if
do
you
that.
Want to check that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah. You can so see what we look
see
like.
See some of our archived webcasts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, that's it. We will be back with you soon. I think a replay of this show is going to be on tomorrow on Netroots. I forget what time,
me
so
too.
Check the schedule.
Yep.
We're so brand new, we don't even know what's going on. But I have been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and adios. Talk to you soon.